Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at WBEZ.org/events.
Oh, I'm in a mood.
You're listening to Nerdette Recaps Game of Thrones with Peter Sagal. I am Greta Johnson.
And I'm Trisha Bobita, and we are joined by Peter Sagal, who says he's in a mood.
I am in a mood, and I was thinking, for the last couple of episodes, we've had this joke where we will somehow recapitulate the prior episode in our own conversations, and I said, in order to recapitulate last night's episode, we'd have to do something incredibly stupid and destructive that we had already done before to terrible, stupid, and destructive results, and then we'd have to go blindly do it again.
Hmm.
And the best thing I can come up with, it doesn't any good because I've already remarried. So far, it's worked out better.
Okay.
Oh my God.
And if you survive the wedding itself.
Yes. As we said, I'm in a mood, especially about certain tactics that Dany and Tyrion keep doing. Moving on.
So today we are rehashing season 8, episode 4.
Yes, we are.
And that is called The Last of the Starks, which is a more ominous title than I feel like the actual Stark storyline was.
Yes. So far, anyway. We didn't lose a Stark. You thought you were going to.
It was the first time in a long time we had a family meeting, though.
Yes. And she almost said that.
The family
meeting. She almost said, we need to have a family meeting. But what she said was, we'd like a word. But it ended up being that.
It reminded me of Tobias Fünke in Arrested Development saying,
maybe we're having a family meeting.
On her way to the family meeting.
Family meeting! Made me very happy. So we open the show on just like the feet of a dead person. We're not sure which dead person it's going to be. Turns out to be Jorah. We have crying Dany.
Yeah.
And crying Sansa, which I did think the parallels of those two both sort of mourning a person who was important in their lives was kind of lovely.
I will admit that I got a little bit of like a goosebumps emotional reaction to her putting her Stark pin on Theon.
Or as Steve Johnson of the Tribune called it, the prize letter opener of Winterfell. What was that? I know the meaning. It was like, oh, you shall die a Stark because you were always one of us, which is what you really wanted to be. But come on. Anyway.
Wow, you okay. Okay.
I'm in a mood.
I liked it.
How come only the principal characters get a moment to say goodbye? There were like, I don't know how many thousands of corpses arranged in interesting
pot.
Why don't you have like some person we don't know weeping over somebody? Come on.
It was another example of, oh, did the Dothraki and Unsullied matter to no one? Oh, okay, good.
Nobody cared.
That's uncomfortable part of the show for sure.
Yeah. Pretty problematic.
What'd you think of Jon's speech?
I mean, he kind of cribbed most of it from the Night's Watch oath, right?
You know, you steal from the best. I thought that was okay.
Yeah, no, he was, you know, adjusting the tradition that he knew, both the Night's Watch, and it felt very Ned Starky.
Yeah.
So that felt pretty good.
This was the point in the episode where my notes say, I'm almost crying, but also very tired.
That might sum up our entire mood about this television show.
And theirs. Until the drinking started.
We're pretty tired.
Oh, my God. So then we get to the feast party time.
Yes, it became
Stark Party Central.
Exactly.
I guess.
You were an episode late, but my God, there it was. Finally, Stark Party Central. And they're drinking and having a fine time.
First line of dialogue, Gendry asking where Arya is.
So, where's Arya? Anybody seen Arya?
Oh, no. I just want to say goodbye. I did nothing. I just, you know. And the Hound. Oh, come on. Is the Hound a little bitter that Gendry got with Arya, you think? You think a deep in the Hound's bitter heart?
No,
I think it's just a bitter heart.
Well, and maybe it's like a dad thing where it's like, I don't want to picture my daughter being with anyone. Thank you very much.
Really? So,
I don't know.
So you wanted the Hound to say to Arya, you're not going out like that, are you?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then Gendry becomes a lord just like that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Bing, bang, boom.
Maybe he becomes a lord. A lot of it depends on what happens in the next two episodes.
There's
a lot of promising of things that people don't own in this episode. You can have Highgarden. You can have Storm's End.
Yeah.
Exactly. And none of which will have any relevance unless, of course, they win.
But isn't that just what like everybody does for their delegates ahead of an election? Promise them jobs.
Jobs. Yeah. Help us out. You'll get a cool job.
Tax credits, job programs. Yeah.
I'd also wonder how good a Lord Gendry is going to be. I mean, his expertise is pretty limited to hammering on things.
I mean, I think he'll be better at it than pretty much every other lord we've seen.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, he's actually a good dude, probably because he's not a lord.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It was also very shrewd politicking by Dany to do that, though.
As Tyrion pointed out.
Sure. Yes. Yeah.
There was a lot of commentary.
Making sure that we knew what was happening. It's we're smart enough now. You've trained us to know.
You
we
just
really
did this thing,
that.
Said Tyrion, for the purposes of your own purposes. And that made good sense. And Dany goes, yes, I know. And now we in the audience do, too. But we could have figured that out, maybe.
So also at that feast, we have Sansa talking with the Hound.
Yes.
Which we actually have the clip from that. Let's listen to it and then talk about it.
You've changed, little bird. None of it would have happened if you left King's Landing with me. No Littlefinger. No Ramsay. None of it.
Without Littlefinger and Ramsay and the rest, I would have stayed a little bird all my life.
So we did get quite a few tweets and voicemails about the problematic nature of Sansa essentially saying, if I hadn't been raped all those times, I wouldn't be the strong person I am today.
That's that without getting into the specific objections, that idea, yes, we went through hell, but if it wasn't for hell, then we wouldn't have gotten to where we are, has been said a bunch of times.
Yes.
This one sounded problematic, of course, because of what the word in this context, Ramsay, means.
Yeah.
Which means horrific rape. In fact, he even said in a bit we didn't have there, it was awful. I think the phrase he used was broken in, and it was kind of rough. It was an explicit reference to her awful wedding night. So, that was a little icky.
Yeah, I think it works for this character, though, because also compartmentalizing all the terrible things that happen to you in some way that makes them feel productive.
Yeah.
Or inevitable in this world that she's living in. I mean, it's also completely unclear why the Hound thinks anything would have been better for her.
Yes.
She could have either been at the Red Wedding and then died, or like who knows what else would have happened to her. But it's not like the Hound has been sort of holed up in some comfortable place for all this time
either. Right. And I do think that's where, I mean, she's seen some of the most, I was going to say, stark character development from season one, episode one to now, just in terms of her as a leader and as like a strong, badass woman.
I was actually more curious about something that I don't think anybody has commented on. He had this thing with Sansa where he kept trying to protect her, where he did, as he just referenced, offered to save her and run away with her.
And also saved her from rape when they attacked in Flea Bottom. And he's had some moments where he definitely saved those Stark girls.
Yes, and then he sort of recapitulated that with Arya over a longer period of time. And he still feels for Arya. And there's this I think it's kind of beautiful that this incredibly cynical, mean person who literally never has a kind word to say to anyone ever has this thing to try to protect these young women. I don't think it's creepy. I don't think it's ever been creepy.
No. I think he just He also, I think, was always just doing what he was told when he was working for Joffrey. But probably thinks everyone is stupid, but thought Ned Stark was at least trying to do right. And so there's a little bit of, whereas Brienne does it all out of honor and all this other stuff, he's a little bit like, these are actually just kids who, you know, didn't ask for any of this. He does ride down the butcher's boy, though, so it's not like he's like a warrior for children everywhere.
No, he's somebody who, for reasons we can talk about, the scarring at the hands of his brother, whatever, has like completely cut himself off of human emotion. It's how he gets through life. He just kills people. But he's got clearly this thing. And there's that moment, was it in conversation with Sansa, where somebody says, you know, well, what makes you happy? And he says, that's my business.
Yeah.
Nothing makes me happy.
Yeah, because she's like, you could be hooking up with – he had just scared off a woman next to him.
Which, by the way, is another story. What did you guys think of like the random woman coming up and saying, have sex with me?
I mean, it's funny because I feel like last episode it was like, okay, so they're all still alive, so they're just going to couple off and wave to the camp. Like, they're just,
There was a lot of that, yeah.
Yeah.
There was a lot. Did you see, apparently in the background, Podrick walks off with two women?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Well, of course. And of course, in the weird way, Tormund figures out he's not going to get Brienne, and so if you'd excuse the expression, the showrunners throw him a bone.
Hey,
everybody quiet, because Peter Sagal's got another goddamn opinion.
Hey-o. Also in that scene, if you look at what wasn't too dark to see, there was a Starbucks.
Oh, yes.
Coffee cup.
Yes.
On the table. Just like this one here, visual aid.
Yes. I actually stopped at Starbucks and I brought it here and I hope that nobody would notice it until it was too late.
Uh-huh.
But you pointed
it
out. So.
Got it.
Yeah.
Google this, folks, because apparently it's real.
That was the.
It's great. We'll retweet it too. Somebody screen capped it and tweeted it.
Yes. And then somebody actually, I couldn't find it, but somebody actually did a Starbucks cup with Daenerys' titles written all the way down it. That's Daenerys Stormborn, good. Targaryen, Mother of Dragons, Breaker of Trains. Very funny. It's written on the whole cup.
Okay, so from there.
From the 80s party movie?
Oh, from the 80s party movie,
Before we move on. So the Hound didn't say, nothing makes me happy.
He wants to kill.
He didn't say, I'd never be happy. He says, there is something that will make me happy. It's clearly going down to
Clegane Bowl.
Yes, he's got a ticket, 50-yard line for the Clegane Bowl, and he doesn't want to be late. That seems obvious.
Yeah, right? And my favorite road trip buddy cop movie is back, which is Arya and the Hound.
Oh, it was great.
King's Landing.
I mean, fan service, yes, but service me. Give me that. That was great.
So also in that first party scene, we have the game that Tyrion and Jaime are playing with Brienne,
which is a callback, I think, to something in season one.
Yes,
right.
Yep.
With
early
him,
days.
Bronn, and Shay, was it?
Yes, exactly. And there's like the question of whether or not Brienne is a virgin, and then we go straight to essentially Arya just shooting some arrows.
Yes,
outside.
Just... I am celebrating.
Yeah, let's not forget that she is a psychopath.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like they were pretty clear about that.
They've kind of stayed true to that. Which, I mean, if she had sort of said anything even mildly tender to Gendry, it wouldn't. I mean,
oh, I would have thrown things at the TV.
I know, but she was great.
Yes,
she was like, she says, "This isn't going to work. I'm going to be nice to you about it."
Yeah, but like, you're a very nice boy.
Yes.
I am not going to be a lady of anything.
Thank you for your services and good luck to you.
Yes.
And then she just goes back to shooting arrows.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, which is what she does.
So from there we go to Brienne and Jaime.
Yes, these are my notes in my notebook. No, 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 no.
I wrote, I feel weird, and then, oh, seriously,
I'm very interested in what you guys think of this, because I didn't like it, and I don't know why I didn't like it. I always have this weird thing about watching characters I actually like and have gotten to know as human beings being, like, intimate. It's just a thing. It's like you feel like you open the wrong bedroom
it's
door.
It's like your parents.
It's like,
oh,
sorry.
Oh, yeah. or your brother or your best friend. It's like, oh, God, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to see that. Oh, God. But also, can't you have two characters who have, like, a meaningful, important, ultimately fulfilling and self-reinforcing.
And, like, mutually respectful.
Yeah. Yeah. That doesn't end up boning.
Wouldn't that be great?
Wouldn't that be nifty?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to see that.
You know, I mean, even like Jorah and Dany, who almost had a relationship like that, even at the end, Dany says, yes, well, he was in love with me and he always, you know, he always had to deal with that. Too bad.
That like adult friendship is not possible, that it has to be either love or unrequited love.
I mean, like, I found like, as we talked about two episodes ago, when Jaime knighted Brienne, it was one of
that
the most
was great.
One of the most satisfying moments in the whole series. I loved it. It was great. And this just made me say, ick. Did you have to ruin it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And even the Arya, like, well, we're probably all going to be dead tomorrow, so we may as well find out what this is all about.
Right. Even that was okay.
It was sort of like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree that it's disappointing in shows when it feels like, and again, like the whole first sort of act, first third of this episode was like, oh boy, okay, let's just have like a sea of heteronormative coupling up.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Like no matter what the power dynamics were in these relationships, as long as there was a man and a woman in a room, like they were going to start getting busy.
Tyrion did open the door for the possibility that Brienne had slept with a woman.
Yes,
which I sort of appreciated from the point of view of at least introducing the concept beyond heteronormativity.
And there was like I think there was a scene of some smooching in the corner of some people who were maybe of the same gender. But the point being that the same as Peter was just making, which is, why can't they just be two knights who are great friends?
Right.
Why do they have to get together?
And people might point out, and I totally get it, that one of the things that's important about Brienne's backstory is her sort of strange, frustrated, unrequited love for inaccessible men, starting, of course, with Renly, which drove her whole life prior to the moment we met her. And that was ultimately kind of transferred to Jaime for similar reasons. He's a knight. He's, you know, the symbol of power and
glory. He's a looker.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would have been less upset about it if it had been sort of like a mutually respectful hookup.
Yeah.
And she hadn't begged him to stay later on.
Yeah,
that was the part where I felt really gross about it.
Them getting together, I was actually fine with.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a little like cheesy to me that they were both also like, we got to get really drunk to do this. Like that felt a little also like these two people who are just barely in control of like their destinies and emotions again are, you know, 80s party movie.
You know, I get they got to blow off some steam. Like, okay, you know.
And it is true that both Brienne and Gendry, you could argue, make the same error, is that they think that hooking up means that they're going to have a relationship. Yeah. I mean, what in the world are like Brienne and Jaime going to talk about it at breakfast after the first week?
Night stuff. Yeah, swords and shit.
Well, Sir Jaime, would you like a muffin? I would, Sir Brienne of Tarth.
I've never slept with a knight before.
Yeah.
That was nice. pretty good. So from there we go to Jon and Daenerys.
Yes.
And first thing Danny asks Jon is, are you drunk?
Yes.
And he is.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, we need to set it up, though, because there was that prior scene.
That's true.
Where everybody was going
Danny's
nuts.
Danny's not
Tormund
having fun.
Was like, Tormund was doing, you know, for Jon what Davos used to do for Stannis. Look at this guy.
Yeah.
What a great guy.
Uh-huh.
We
no
love you.
No one like us.
Hype man.
Exactly.
He was a
better.
Hype man.
Thank you, Trisha. Yes. He had a big, it being medieval, he had to have a big sundial hanging from his neck.
Uh-huh.
As opposed to the classic clock for the hype man. I got one hip-hop reference. That was it. That's it. I
Good
got no
one.
More. Thank you.
Good one.
But yeah, and so, first of all, let's break that down. So I'm reacting a little bit to a lot of things I've seen on the internet since it was aired. A lot of people are saying, John doesn't deserve this. John isn't actually a great hero. Mm. John isn't actually a great leader of men. John keeps screwing up. So Tormund's, oh, you're the best. You came back. You fight. You're just amazing. You've rode a dragon. People are like, ah, come on. I actually think he's pretty okay for a hero. He's brave. He's stalwart.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't give up. He's won all his battles, ultimately, whatever mistakes he's made.
Well, and there is something kind of endearing about his, like, simple-minded determination to always do what's right.
Yes.
Especially within this world, right? Like, you just see that so rarely. And you even see it in this scene with Jon talking to Daenerys.
I owe them the truth.
Even if the truth destroys us.
It won't.
It will. I've never begged for anything. But I'm begging you. Don't do this. Please.
You are my queen. Nothing will change that. And they're my family. We can live together.
We can. I've just told you how.
She's like, why don't you just not tell anybody that you're a Targaryen? And he's like, but then I would have to lie.
Oh, God. Here's the thing, though, about that scene. She's totally right.
Oh, yeah.
she is right in every particular. All they need to do to save everything, to save their relationship, to save the kingdom, to save everything and proceed down the path they thought we were on is just he has to keep his mouth shut.
Yeah.
And everything's cool.
And if she took him at his word that he actually doesn't want to be king, then what she's asking him to do is actually not irrational in any way.
Exactly. And there's my favorite line of the episode was he says, if only there was a way to make things the way they were. And she says,
and she's like,
I just told you how to do it.
Yeah.
And that to me was like, A, both true and also indicative of how sometimes in this life it's hard to do the thing that you think you want. Yeah, in the face of other incentives.
In that scene, I thought there were two very well-acted pivots. One was when they were making out, and Kit Harington does a great bit of just sort of like physical acting where he's like smooching and then goes, oh, you're my aunt. Like he doesn't say it, but
you
just feel it.
Oh, yeah. And finally, by the way, somebody said it later on when Varys says it. Oh, yes, that's his aunt.
Oh, yeah. They're not into that up north.
No, they're
up
not.
Up north, they think that's a little bit funny business.
I mean, I think I can predict safely. I think that they're never going to do it again because now they know and they know what we've known. So they're going to be as skeeved out by it as we've been to this point.
I think the fact, too, that they headed out in different directions, you know, like they're not heading to
it's
battle.
It's a good thing, though. Otherwise, we would have lost John.
Yeah, I know.
For sure.
I have some words about that. there were a lot of things and we'll talk about them in the episode that were good, that were bad, that were made not so great. I don't know. But I can't tell you how much it drove me crazy that they decided to once again split their forces,
mm-hmm.
once again put a bunch of characters on ships and sail them out there when at this point they have no excuse. They've done this before.
Well, and they know that there's a bunch of assholes on boats waiting
Euron
for them.
Euron has boats. Oh,
yeah.
I know. Let's go on the ocean. Let's get some boats. And I went back and I rewatched that sort of scene around the Western
at the armory.
And, well, is it the armory?
Yeah,
it's
with the map table.
I think it was the map room. And I was like, why did they decide to do that? Why did they decide to once again split their forces? Why did they decide to once again put people at sea where Euron can get them? And you know why they did it? I don't know. Mm-hmm. They never explain. Tyrion says, John will march down with what remains of the Dothraki and we will go this way. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't say why. He doesn't say why they need to go to Dragonstone. He doesn't say why do they not do the obvious thing, which is all stay together mm-hmm. and march together down the King's Road. No, they just need to lose another dragon and give up Missandei. So that, and it's, I mean, it's almost as if Tyrion could have said that. Well, we still have a little bit too much of an advantage.
Yeah, we should split up.
Otherwise, I mean, Euron has boats. We have to give him a fair shot.
So in that scene, they also mentioned the new Prince of Dorne.
Right.
Which I thought was kind of interesting just because
just to remind us that
Dorne
exists. Still there.
Yeah.
I think it was just that. I think it was like, yes, we know there's this place called Dorne.
Dorne's a thing. We've given up on the storyline, but we thought we would just mention it one final time before season 8 is over to acknowledge that it was in fact
a thing. When looking at the giant map, you must reference the places on the giant map.
But now that I've made my enormous complaint that drove me crazy, we can go back and talk about more scenes at Winterfell before they leave. So, for example, we had what seemed like final farewells to Tormund,
Sam,
Gilly, and Ghost. You won't have it?
I won't have it.
All right. Tormund clearly is leaving the series.
Tormund and Ghost are getting a spinoff show.
Right.
It's just them. And I will watch that.
I want Tormund and Ghost not only to have a spinoff show, but I want it to have one of those like 80s action show style montages.
Yes, totally. They fight crime together.
They fight crime, like shooting them and jumping over bars and cars and walking into rooms, pointing their guns in the opposite directions and all the other things that they used to do on like, I don't know what the names of those shows were. Brooks and Dunn, what were they called? Cagney and Lacey? I have no idea.
Turner and Hooch.
One of those
Turner
things.
Turner and Hooch.
That's the show. Oh. Anyway, so do you think Tormund's like not gone for this series?
Tormund might be gone, but I don't think this is the last we see of Sam. Even if it's a sort of perfunctory Sam, like if there's ashes to be standing around, I think Sam stands around them with everyone at the end. Because I do think that he is going to be the person who writes this story.
Right.
And so he has to
at least be
around.
Yeah.
I did write, this feels like a real goodbye, especially with the whole Gilly baby thing. It was like, how can we wrap this up?
Gilly baby.
You know?
Yeah. But there was no question either to Tormund or to Sam, we've got this war to fight. Hey, Tormund,
you're
a big fighter. You still have some followers.
No, man,
come with us.
He's sick of being south. He needs to
I understand back. That. But he would have said, Tormund, we still have a war to fight. Please come with me. You're great. And then he could have said, I ain't fighting your wars. You guys can go screw around now that we're fine.
Yeah.
But they didn't even have that moment.
Yeah, Tormund. Yeah. Or Ghost felt ominous for Jon.
Yeah.
I did really love the moment when Tormund tells Jon, you've got the North in you, the real North. I think since so much about the storyline with Jon now is about sort of like who his family really is.
Yes,
and
North
is he a Stark? And what does Winterfell mean if he's actually a Targaryen? And I thought that was just kind of a lovely encapsulation of the fact that like he still is a Northerner as much as he's figuring out his shit now. Like that's still a very real part of his identity.
Well, and saying that the capital and the south is no place for ghosts is a little bit of him maybe saying it's really no place for me either.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Or it's probably a way of saying if I had a direwolf, then whatever is about to happen would be less likely. So I need to get rid of the direwolf.
Yeah, I can't have my awesome bodyguard around.
Yeah, I don't know.
That was a weird, like, just nod he gave Ghost.
Yeah,
like,
you don't.
Right.
The internet was very upset that he didn't get some ear scratches, but he did only have one ear left.
That's true.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Well, and I don't know if direwolves really like to be pet. You know,
it's a fair question.
Like, Ghost is not like his loyal dog, you know.
Looked like him. He looked like him. He was like,
yeah, but he's like his wolf brother, you know.
Still. Yeah. Well, then you shake his
like,
paw
wolf
firmly.
Wolf brothers don't need cup shake.
You shake.
Ghost
shake. Ghost shake. Exactly. Firm handshake. Bum, 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 bum. You know, do the guy percussive hug thing. And you move on.
The three
thump,
pets.
Thump,
okay.
And then
okay,
you move
good.
On.
Perfect.
Also, can we go back to the war council room for
Please.
A moment
yeah.
and discuss that again? Sansa is the only one with any sense in her head.
Because everyone is really tired. We should take some time.
Exactly. How dare you? Oh, you don't want me to take my... No, I would like these guys
like,
to get something to eat.
Your people are tired, too.
Yeah.
Wait, you know who got killed because they were injured? The dragon?
Yeah, for example.
For example, the dragon was not at his best while flying and so got killed?
I'm sorry, I'm so mad.
The other moment we need to discuss that's actually right after that scene in the map room is when Jaime and Tyrion are chatting and Tyrion's like, so you finally... slept with someone taller than you.
Oh, I loved his. I've been waiting all my life to make tall jokes. I thought that was great.
Yes, exactly. Discussing climbing mountains.
Yes. Ha, ha, ha.
Toast to climbing mountains. And then Bronn just wanders in. Like, what was that?
I'm always just so glad to see him, though.
I mean, it's great to see him, but it's like, oh, you just traipsed in here, huh?
You know what's amazing is we know what they were doing in the 18 months between season 7 and season 8 is building a high-speed rail between King's Landing.
That's going to come
Winterfell
in handy because I was wondering about that with Arya and the Hound.
Yeah, like, zip, zip, zip.
It's like,
here they are.
So...
Turn around. Zip, 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 zip. We're back. I liked the scene with Bronn. It was a nice return to Bronn, but also you see that Bronn is kind of changing. He's over it, and he's a little desperate now.
Yeah.
He has that great line. He says, my fighting days are over, but not my killing days.
Yeah, yeah.
He clearly is a little sick of this and a little at edge. And I think they're setting Bronn up for death. Because I think that if Bronn – because why do we love Bronn? We love Bronn because he's cynical, because he's funny, because he's always there with a quip. And this was a slightly different guy who seems to be going to a slightly darker place.
I did really like what he said about the history of houses. When they said something to him like he wouldn't actually be a lord because he's a cutthroat. And he's like, what do you think your ancestors were? They were just cutthroats who ended up with land and now you have all these houses.
Yeah, you have 100 guys. You kill 100 people, you're a lord. You kill 1,000 people, you're a king.
Yeah,
like, yeah,
I thought that was a pretty good – I mean, I like those bits that sort of bring out the more important significant themes that we've been seeing across the 8 seasons.
There was
right?
also
sort of like, yep, that's it. Here we are.
After Bronn gets back up and leaves to get back because you know the high speed train was leaving and he had to get on.
Yeah,
it,
he had to
because otherwise he
catch
wait,
the
wait
metro,
the next one.
Westerosi metro.
Jaime and Tyrion exchange a look. It's just a little shot, you know, and I think that look was he's got to die. That's what I think it was. I think Bronn is not long for this this mythical world.
So what did you two think about Sansa telling Tyrion about Jon's Targaryen heritage?
You knew it was going to happen.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I wrote...
Swear you won't tell anyone.
Funny.
We've all been in high school. We know how this works.
I wrote, tell Tyrion, and then damn it, because you know Tyrion was walking away. And then she says, oh, wait, like, come back. And then I write, yes.
Well, and he sort of... cracked the door open by saying, like, John's always said he's not a Stark.
Uh-huh,
yes, which was, wasn't that kind of the prompt for
yeah,
Sansa to
like,
say?
Yeah, she's like, well, actually.
It reminded me a lot of a quote that I was taught to live by as a child by my father, which I believe is a Ben Franklin quote, but most things that you think are Ben Franklin quotes are not, but
yes.
Why not
wow,
attribute
I'm,
them?
What
ben
is
Ben Franklin
it?
And Winston Churchill.
Three people can keep a secret if two of them are dead.
Yes.
Right. Did Ben, that seems a little bloody-minded for
Franklin?
Ben Franklin.
Should we Google that? I do remember hearing about it.
I did Google it.
I don't mean
it,
to fact-check your father.
Yeah, no.
I did Google it, and it did say on some parts of the internet that Ben Franklin may have said that. But as a journalist, I'm just saying, who knows? But it's still a good point, which is, as Varys says, 8 people know now. Well, that's
right.
Not a secret. That's information.
Yes. So, yeah, that's
line.
Actually the next scene we have is Tyrion and Varys on the boat heading to Dragonstone discussing this news that they have. And it's the first of two pretty intense conversations that Tyrion and Varys have.
And I will
say,
this part of the episode I loved because this to me is classic Game of Thrones.
Yes,
I've been doing a rewatch, and this is like season 1, season 2, Littlefinger and Varys and Tyrion plotting and plotting and scheming, and I love it.
How many others know?
Including us? 8.
No, then it's not a secret anymore. It's information. If a handful of people know now, hundreds will know soon. Then what happens?
She loses the North. She loses the Vale. Sansa will make sure of that.
It's worse than that. He has the better claim to the throne.
He doesn't want the throne.
I'm not sure it matters what he wants.
This one is essentially like them catching each other up, and then it closes with Tyrion saying, well, we still have to take King's Landing. Maybe Cersei will kill us all anyway, and then none of this will be a problem.
Yeah.
And then it goes to Dany flying over and Euron and the dragon down.
Oh, man. I've already said how angry I am about that. I mean, it's like, yes, they killed the dragon. Fine. It's a CGI creature. We're going to get over it. But it's just so dumb. Why did they do that? And why didn't she fly high enough to maybe look around and notice the fleet? It's a fleet of ships.
But there was like a rock.
There was a rock. It was behind the rock.
Well, and those arrows have never been that effective.
Well, apparently in
the Scorpion 2.0 is much better than 1.0.
Benioff and Weiss say in the Inside the Episode featurette that in the intervening however many months or years since the Battle of the Loot Train, Qyburn's been working on him. He's been
Qyburn
improving.
Surface
creeps to air
me
missiles.
Out so much.
He's the last great sort of British male villain actor we have. We've lost Roose Bolton and Ramsay Bolton, and we've lost all of Stannis, but we still got Qyburn being creepy and raspy,
just,
and I love
it. Gives me the shivers every time I see him.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about him.
It was also so
it
funny
might be
to
his
see
cowl
him.
Neck.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the cowl. That's the problem.
I mean, no, but that makes it even. I just.
There was such a knitter's problem to have with it.
In King's Landing, it's just so warm. We didn't see any snow in King's Landing, did we?
Yeah, it had snowed there, but apparently
it
it's
melted.
Over now. It's
well,
melted.
The Night King is gone, so maybe winter is less.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Well, but it's still a thing.
We've lost track. So which Varys Tyrion conversation do you wish to discuss?
Well, I think we should wait and for the second one until we line up a couple of other things, which is that Missandei is taken. Grey Worm yells for her on the beach. Seems like everybody else made it okay. And then we have Varys trying to reason with Dany.
Right.
And the two of them are talking. And this is when Dany says, like, this is my destiny to destroy tyranny.
Do not become what you have always struggled to defeat.
Do you believe we're here for a reason, Lord Varys? I'm here to free the world from tyrants. That is my destiny. And I will serve it no matter the cost.
All right. We don't have one, but if we did, or maybe you can play one anyway, I need a rant jingle because I'm about to go on a rant.
Gather around and listen while old Peter Sagelman explains this show to you.
I feel like that'll do. Yeah, okay.
Because here's the thing. So we remember at the end of season six, these many years ago, here comes Dany in her fleet with her three dragons, with her Unsullied, with her Dothraki. Here she comes. Mm-hmm. She is going to take out Cersei. And as soon as season seven started, everybody says the same thing to her. Says, well, you can't just go take out Cersei. You'd kill too many people. You don't want to be the horrible tyrant. No, you have to do this incredibly stupid thing that will screw up your forces and you'll lose some portion of your advantage. And that conversation has happened so many times.
Yeah.
And every time
she
it
never
has
listens.
Ended up being – no, she has listened.
Well,
that's what I mean.
I mean, she didn't with Highgarden, though.
She didn't with – well, she ended up –
I mean, like, she burned the shit out of those guys.
Well, she burned the
and
shit
they told
out
her
of,
not to.
She burned the shit out of the Lannister army, but it was pointless. It didn't do anything except provide this really great special effects sequence midway through an otherwise disappointing season. Every single time somebody says to her, oh, you can't do this. But nobody ever says – she did once, I think, toward the end of last season. But other than that, nobody ever says, you know, the last time you told me to do that, I lost half my fleet mm-hmm. and half my soldiers. And then you told me to do that, Tyrion, and we sent the Unsullied to Casterly Rock and there was nobody there. And you guys shut up. Because if I had just done what I wanted to do, this would have been over and a lot of people I like would still be alive.
She does shout at Tyrion on the beach at one point after one of those big losses and sort of goes like, really? I'm listening to you? Because you clearly don't know your sister well enough to advise me in any meaningful way.
Well, and that's
she
when she goes and flames Highgarden.
Right.
That's when she's like, yeah, I'm not going to listen to your advice anymore. I have these dragons.
But now she's still doing it. So they say to her, well, and they engage in that ridiculous conversation that I guess was in the map room where they say, okay, everybody will blame Cersei for when you destroy the city. And she's like, okay, that's good. No, it doesn't make any sense at all. Stop doing that. I'm like, oh. I mean, you know, there's this.
Wait, why doesn't that make sense? That does make sense.
Because, no, there's – because
thank you, Trisha.
Because they keep – first of all, they keep making this terrible mistake of like, well, the one thing we can't do is just go there and kill her. Because if we go there and kill her, that would be bad. So we keep having to do these other things. And every time it ends up in disaster. There's a famous line from Breaking Bad, which I've thought about a lot for different reasons, where Gus Fring says to Walter White, never make the same mistake twice.
Yeah.
And she's making the same mistake over and over and over again and listening to the same advice over and over and over again and doing the same damn thing. So where does it end up? It ends up with her in front of King's Landing with like what, 30?
Yeah.
That's all she's got left and her one dragon.
A school bus full of Unsullied.
First of all, I don't understand why immediately – they didn't kill all of them with all the Lannister armies and archers.
I really thought Tyrion was going to get rid of the arrows last night.
Old Game of Thrones would have, don't you think?
And so, you know, I understand and have talked about it, everybody's talked about it, how the fact is that if she had just done what she had the power to do at episode one of season seven, the show would be over then. So they couldn't do that. But the fact that she has ended up with like her 30 last Unsullied, her one last wounded sad dragon she can't even use – standing there watching her best friend get her head chopped off and not being able to do it about it indicates that she's been stupid. And there's been a lot of unnecessary stupidity of otherwise smart characters.
I do think there is something kind of lovely about the idea, like the story arc of people trying to convince her not to behave rashly and use this immense violence that she has, because right. that's what her family would do.
Right.
And then the inevitability of her still turning into a mad queen.
But here's the funny thing. A lot of people, I don't think she's turning into the mad queen. I think that she's been given really, really terrible advice.
Yeah.
And she's stupidly followed it. And that's her flaw. It's not that she's like – and everybody says, oh, I don't know about Dani. She seems crazy. She seems to want to kill everybody.
No, she seems to want to do pretty reasonable things. And also she's grieving like everybody else. She's not gone mad.
The people who have given her the advice to keep her from killing lots of people – I'm making air quotes – have in themselves been necessary for far more deaths than she's ever done. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was Tyrion's stupid advice that got the entire Dorne fleet destroyed. I guess it was technically the Iron Islands fleet with the Dorne army on it. I mean, it's just, come on, people.
If the show got a little more Ocean's 11, all we would need in that map room is for Tyrion to just sort of like roll out a drawing of the Red Keep. Go like, right. This is where Cersei, like
for
this
sure.
room in
yes.
this tower is where Cersei sleeps. Go burn that with your dragon tonight.
Right.
You don't have to burn all of King's Landing. You don't have to burn all of the Red
right.
Keep.
Well,
you have a laser-guided fire missile.
But she doesn't get – like, she's cool with burning everything. That's what I'm – like, she seems to have no problem. Like, she's not asking for an alternative. She's just like, yeah, if that's what it takes to ruin
but she's,
it, let's
but
burn
she
all
has,
of it.
She has gone along with alternatives this entire time, and they've all been disastrous. That's what I mean. I mean, yes, I understand, like, the first time that she took this advice and it ended up terribly with Euron, you know – what's Euron ambushing the fleet and capturing people. But she just did it again. And I'm like, lady.
Nobody cares, but it never really stops him.
It's like I've turned into Jerry Lewis. Hey, lady. Stop being an idiot. Again, one last contrast with Breaking Bad. The thing about Breaking Bad, particularly toward the end of that series, is it led to disaster, right? But the road to disaster was paved not with good intentions, but with people doing something that seemed in the moment really smart, their best choice given the pressure they were under. To take one example among many, Walter White's like, oh, my God, I realize now I've been led into a trap and I'm going to be caught by Hank. I know I need to call the neo-Nazis because they're the only people I got who can help me.
Yeah.
Well, that led to disaster, but that choice made sense from Walter's perspective.
The least worst option at
right.
the time.
Mm-hmm. And that was generally true of Breaking Bad, people making the correct decision that led them further into hell. This, they're just being dumb. And
yeah.
it's less compelling.
All right, we will be back with more of Peter's rants in just a moment. Okay, so we're about to discuss the scene with Tyrion and Varys, but first, can we talk really quickly about that cool-ass tote bag that people can get?
Oh, I thought that one of the characters had a tote bag, and I'm like, hell, there was a Starbucks cup. Why not a tote bag? I missed that too.
No, Nerdette is in the midst of its spring fundraiser. We've got just a couple more weeks. Our goal is to get 500 people to donate. We're at like 180-something right now. So we would love to hear from folks, especially if recaps is a thing you like and you want a cool ass tote bag. You can get it on the internet. Some people have they ordered it last week or the week before and they've already gotten them in the mail, which is kind of cool. We actually got a picture of one. And Jen said the bag and my 13th half marathon medal are tied for my favorite things I received this weekend.
Well done, Jen.
Really awesome.
Congratulations.
But yeah, you can see a picture of the tote bag on our Instagram. Just search for Nerd App Podcast. But we would really appreciate the supports.
Yes, we would.
Okay, Varys and Tyrion discuss treason.
Right, as Tyrion points out. So again, we get into this thing. Was like, oh, Dany, she seems terrible. No, she doesn't.
No, she's
gotten
not
terrible advice
being that
from
irrational.
You.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm sort of very skeptical about that whole sort of line of like, I don't know, can we trust Dany? What do you think? I mean, obviously they're setting up a huge rift that's going to play out in the final two episodes.
Yeah, I'm into this. I really like this storyline.
You do.
It's funny that you two aren't into
why?
It. No, I like it. You like it? Yeah, I don't know. I just think, well, let's listen to the clip and then talk about it.
You know where my loyalty stands. You know I will never betray the realm.
What is the realm? A vast continent.
What even is the realm?
Most of them don't care who sits on the Iron Throne.
Millions of people, many of whom will die if the wrong person sits on that throne.
We don't know their names, but they're just as real as you and I. They deserve to live. They deserve food for their children. I will act in their interest, no matter the personal cost.
So what happens to her? Please. Don't.
I've spoken as honestly as I can. Each of us has a choice to make. I pray we choose wisely.
I just thought of something I hadn't thought of when I was watching last night, which What's is that? Varys is doomed. Remember Miss Remember Melisandre?
He must die in this strange country.
Yes.
Yeah.
So do you think that we're setting up a big backstab by Varys that ends up getting him killed somehow?
I think so. I mean, and also, he did what he promised. He told her to her face that he thought she was making the wrong choice, and she didn't listen to that advice.
What was she going to do that she wanted to go to King's Landing
and just burn it?
She wanted to just torch everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is a crazy thing to do. Like, there have to be other ways to kill Cersei if that's what you want to do. You know what I mean? As
Again,
you discussed,
the
like,
laser-guided fire missile.
The laser-guided fire missile.
Yeah, I just, yeah. Or, like, sneak in an assassin.
Yeah.
You know?
What, do they know any really stealthy assassins, though?
I don't know. That might be hard to come by in Westeros.
I don't know.
That could be really
Never mind. Anyway.
So, from that sweet stoner conversation about the realm, we go to...
Can I just say about that, though?
Yeah.
That this is one of the things that I love about Varys, and I had kind of forgotten how much I love, because he'd been sort of just quippy for the last few seasons.
Yeah, yeah. This is the most substantive thing he said in a while.
It's also the Varys that makes me feel bad about myself, because it's the reminder that, like, everybody else who isn't a named character is a person too, and we shouldn't actually be rooting for any of these awful people.
Yes, they're all terrible.
Because it's just perpetuating a system that, like, is oppressive and requires the suffering of, you know, millions of nameless people.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, yeah, wait, why do we want anyone to be on this dumb iron chair?
Yeah. Hey.
It makes me feel bad about it.
Well, and it's interesting to think about who talks about the realm, too. I mean, I think in season one, it's Ned Stark often who's discussing the realm, you know, and the idea of, like, the people who are just more high-minded about what ruling really means and the idea of actually taking care of people as opposed to just, like, sitting on this throne. I think
and saying about John that maybe the sign of a true leader is someone who doesn't want to rule.
Right. Yes. As I was think, it? Didn't Tyrion say that about John?
Yes.
Isn't
is
that
it?
Or was it Varys?
I think it's probably Varys.
Varys. Yeah.
The best ruler,
John.
The person who doesn't want
well,
to rule.
Who was it who said the thing about the best sort of president? Was it Mark Twain? The best kind of president
probably
would be
Ben
someone...
Franklin. Let's just attribute
okay,
all
I think it was Ben
quotes
Franklin,
to Ben Franklin.
Who said the best kind of president would be someone who didn't want to be. Like, anyone who inherently wants to be president shouldn't be.
Since we just discussed Cersei and maybe the assassination thereof.
I thought you
thereof,
were going to bring up Ben Franklin.
We skipped something, which was Jaime's farewell.
That
we
is
we
next.
Talked of, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that hadn't happened
it
in the
sequence.
It
hadn't happened yet.
I thought we went
we
over
go
it.
From
I,
will, the,
I withdraw the complaint.
We go from the Stoner Realm chat to Jaime staring deeply into the flames, and then Brienne wakes up and he's gone.
Yeah.
And she goes out there.
You
and
knew that
to
was
him.
Gonna happen.
Yeah, we actually I do want to play a voicemail right now about that. This is from Nate Pence, and I thought it just summed up that whole situation.
Hey Nerdette and Peter. Nate Pence here from Minneapolis, Minnesota. I guess my biggest reaction to the episode is I feel like I was a fool with Jaime. He's such a fuckboy. Why am I surprised or expect that he would not do what his character has always done? Anyways, and then also, why can't dragons fly around ships and then blow them up?
Yeah, fly around to the back, for example.
Thanks for the show, guys. Bye.
Can I ask, because Greta, you posted, I think, a picture on Twitter of your notebook that said
Fuckboy
Jaime or Jaime the Fuckboy.
Yeah.
Can I ask, please, for a definition of fuckboy? It's spelled F-U-C-K-B-O-I.
I should have looked up the technical definition. My understanding is that it's just like an asshole who you slept with who screws with you.
Oh, he's just a fuckboy.
Yeah, he's just like a... And like, I think sometimes there's sort of like an emo layer to it. But yeah, it's just somebody who's like... emotionally manipulative, even if you were game to bang, is my general notion.
Emotionally manipulative unless you're game to
bang. Even if you're game to bang.
So use it in a sentence.
Jaime's a fuckboy.
No, I mean, like a sentence like, for example, would it be appropriate and a good usage of the term to say, oh, that guy, he's not my boyfriend. He's just my fuckboy.
No.
Or how about this? I thought that guy was like a prospect, but it turns out he's just a fuckboy.
Yes, I think that's a better one.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the last time I heard it in context actually was on Friday night at a Lizzo concert.
Of course.
When Lizzo said, "I've been recovering from something really horrible. I was with a fuckboy." And the whole crowd was like, "Oh."
Okay. All right.
And then she goes into Jerome, who's the fuckboy.
I understand. I understand. I'll have to listen to the song.
Yeah, you should listen to the song. It's really good.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I just think, like, I don't know. I'm curious to hear what you guys think about Jamie, because to me that just completely – he had so much potential for redemption.
Well, hang on.
But to me, I feel like it's all gone now.
So I went back –
no, because is he going to save her or kill her?
He doesn't say. He had a speech.
Why can't he say?
Well, because –
you know,
because it's a TV show and they want there to be some suspense.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, but that's – like, if he's going to kill her –
yes.
I still don't think he's going to be redeemed.
That doesn't matter. His speech, he says, "I did this terrible thing. I threw a boy out of a tower."
I'm not a good person. I'm not a good person.
I did this for Cersei. I did that for Cersei. I did this for – he does three things, all of which we saw happen.
For Cersei. She's hateful. And so am I.
That speech was so carefully written, it seemed to me, that it could play either way.
Yeah.
It could play as, I am destined to her. I am part of her evil. I need to go join her and be a part of her evil again,
or
which
like
is how Brienne takes it.
Or it's like, my responsibility.
Or this, exactly.
Even then,
I have a debt to pay. I have a stain to erase. I am complicit in her evil. I have to go fix it.
I liked everything about him in that scene. I did not like her reaction to it.
I hated her reaction. But I don't know. I also feel like, I mean, if he weren't a fuckboy, I feel like he would have been like, listen, you mean a lot to me. I'm super conflicted about this thing happening. I feel responsible for this horrible person. I have to go deal with that. I'm really sorry.
Jamie, let's remember, has only ever slept with his sister.
Yeah, I know.
He had an insane and sort of psychologically abusive father. He's been through all kinds of torture, too. The idea that he's suddenly going to, like, have a monologue that makes him sound like Mark Ruffalo in a rom-com because he slept with Brienne once is also not Game of Thrones.
That's
like,
true.
That would have been more disappointing. It's more fun to think that Jaime's back to being sort of an asshole because he never wasn't an asshole. He was just drunk and having a good time at a party.
But remember...
No, he's been not an asshole.
Yes.
Yeah, but he's still... Like he is a complicated character. He is not good or evil because he is just Jaime.
Right.
Right. Like he is not actually going to be like, let's pass the muffins, Brienne. Let's have breakfast.
Oh no, for sure not. I just thought.
The thing
I
though,
he's a dick.
The piece of information that prompts his departure. The piece of information that prompts her his departure in the prior scene was getting the news that Euron has ambushed the incredibly dumb Dany. It's not her fault. She just keeps taking bad advice, killed one of the dragons, taken Missandei. And the next thing you see is him getting up and leaving. So clearly what he is inspired to do is inspired by the fact that Cersei is out there winning and needs to be stopped.
Exactly.
So I think he's going to become the Queenslayer, or at least attempt it.
Yeah, I don't know. I just – like he could have gone to the armory meeting too and been like, hey, guys, I want to help. You know, like just him doing his own thing.
He's not really invited. He's not like one of the generals, right?
Right, but like he could have said something to somebody that's like, hey, you know who knows Cersei better than anybody? Me. How can I help you? You know?
Yeah, speaking of which, what? How come
it was just, like... All of the suggested dialogue, I feel.
Obviously, they would have written it better than that.
I know. I mean, we talked about why doesn't Jon invite Tormund to come with him? Why doesn't he invite Jaime, the greatest knight
of
the Seven
Kingdoms?
Why
doesn't he ride with the Hound? Like, you know, it's just, yeah.
I don't.
Why doesn't he team up with Arya? That would be pretty fucking cool.
I think they are
both now riding towards King's Landing.
Yeah. They are, but somehow they're not going to run into each other.
Yeah.
And
or
it's going to
take.
Well, they're on the train. They're
it.
In different cars of the train.
Exactly.
That's
the high speed train.
Is.
Or possibly, I still don't think this is going to happen anymore because you can't let one character kill both baddies. But Jaime's face could be taken and we could be like, Jaime killed Cersei. Oh, Arya killed Cersei.
Yeah. Oh, but we can't have Arya.
Yeah, that's
showing
too
up
awesome.
At the last second and killing Cersei too after she's already.
I mean,
done
we
in the
could.
What if she just leaps from somewhere?
Yeah,
Cersei turns and grabs her by the throat.
At this point, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
Really, it's like, oh, okay, we'll just use that trick again.
What
if she did it like four more times?
I was about to say they never would do the same trick twice, but they just did the same damn trick with Euron twice.
Uh-huh.
So who the hell knows at this point?
Okay, so from there we go to King's Landing, and we have the scene where Qyburn and Tyrion
Have the thing,
which we actually...
This is a big moment for Kuiper.
Hold on. We skipped a scene. There was an intermediary scene in, or an earlier scene in King's Landing in which
all the civilians
welcoming into the keep to protect her as sort of a hostage.
Human shield.
True. And Cersei tells Euron that... They've got the baby
that we have, which is important later because Tyrion knows about the baby.
And there is a good Euron.
His mascara.
Well, and I think especially with Jaime showing up, like I could see him talking about the baby and Euron then losing his shit too.
Yeah.
Right.
Whose baby is it? But anyway, now we're here at King's Landing for the final sequence.
And we did get a pretty charming voicemail about it. I had the same thought, and I'm curious if you two did as well. This is Kenny.
Hey, Nerdette. Am I the only one that was a little disappointed when Tyrion and Qyburn didn't throw down so we could see some hand-to-hand combat in this episode?
Ayo! No.
It would have been a delightful surprise.
Well, no, it's just a great joke because they're both the hands.
Oh.
Hand to hand.
Meeting of the hands.
I apologize for not getting that. Pretty good joke.
It was one of those moments where you realize, like, Qyburn is not up for the, like, this moment. Like, he is best in the dungeons doing weird, creepy things.
Yeah,
he's not really for diplomacy.
Well, or, like, in the daylight, right? Like, when's the last time we saw him outside?
Was there a great moment, did I imagine it, where somebody talks about, like, what screaming sounds like, and Qyburn's like...
We don't want to hear the sounds of burning children. He's like, yeah, it doesn't sound great.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Such a creepy creep.
Oh, God. It was a good moment, though. Anyway, sorry for missing the joke. I was up late watching a dumb TV show.
So I want to get to predictions, but I want to listen to one more voicemail, too, which I think sums up a lot of feedback that we got, especially around sort of like the feminism elements of this show, this specific episode, and like all of the kind of disappointing things that happened to many of the female main characters. So this is Lexi.
After the high of last week, it reminded me of everything that is wrong with Game of Thrones. And it is 100% clear there are no women in the writer's room. So cue the patriarchal jungle on DB and David, because this episode was a hot mess. Dany's going a little cray-cray, and you couldn't be more clear she's not getting the throne unless you wrote hashtag butt her emails. Brienne's begun just reduced to crying over Jaime. Sansa is now the ultimate betrayer. And then you had to kill Missandei, your only woman of color, and I don't know where we go from here. I have no interest in the last two episodes based on this, and I'm really, really frustrated right now, and I'm going to go have some more tequila. Thanks, guys.
It's funny, because I didn't see that. Maybe I'm just insensitive to it. It seems to me that the female characters are vying against each other for power and influence in exactly the same way the male characters have, and they're being just as silly about it as the male characters have been. But the one thing that resonated with that voicemail is something that I realized last night watching the show. It may have been this terrible tactical error of the ships. It might have been something else. But I realized I'm ready to be done with this TV show. Which is the first time I felt that. I've regretted the fact, it's the last episode, it's the last season, we only have a few more episodes. And after last night, I'm like, okay, it can end. I'll be all right. It's over. And that's a weird feeling. And obviously she feels the same thing for maybe different reasons. How do you guys feel?
I think that the speed at which this final season is moving is a little different than the rest of the series. Haven't been going through a rewatch, too. Yeah. But considering just the pace at which we move now, like, yeah. There's a battle next week, and then there's picking up the pieces in the final episode. And that's apparently it. That's all we're going to get. I was holding out hope that there may be some sort of twist or something like that, but I don't think we're going to get it. I think there may be some sort of emotional deaths, and I think we probably lose Tyrion. I think we lose Grey Worm. I think we lose Jon or Dany. I think there's going to be a lot of rough stuff that we watch in these last couple episodes. But I don't know that there's any big surprises left. I would love for there to be one more big twist or surprise or something, but I'm not really sure. They've kind of painted themselves into a corner in terms of an inevitable end that is a lot of ashes and somebody sort of grieving but on the throne. And I think that's where we're headed. And everybody, all the actors also say, like, this is going to be sad, it's going to wreck you, and all this stuff in the interviews that they're doing in a cryptic way. So
I think that's going to be episode 5.
just a big battle. And
yeah,
lots of death.
I think it's gonna be. Yeah, Emilia Clarke did an interview saying that it's way worse than the Battle of Winterfell.
Like,
so I think have a link to that in our newsletter.
I do think though that this question about, losing Miss Ende, I think, is a problem. The show has a problem with how it treats characters of color because they all redshirted in the terms of the Dothraki and the Unsullied, or putting somebody back in chains who'd been a freed slave is really a loaded thing. And I don't know that they gave it enough. They could have given Miss Ende like one more scene, although her last line was
pretty good,
amazing.
Pretty good.
Her last words being "burn them all,"
right?
Basically,
well, Dracarys,
yeah, but like
in so many words,
I do not think though, and I again respect to the folks who think that this is like a problem in terms of the feminism of the show, that these women are behaving as poorly as the male leaders. Of course they are.
Yeah.
Of course they're taking bad advice. Of course they're doing things that aren't stupid. I don't think Sansa's the ultimate betrayer. I think she's the only one looking out for the realm like Varys.
Yeah.
I think she did something really responsible and good. I think...
Well, she's looking out for the North.
Yeah.
No, kind of for everybody, because Dany's kind of ridiculous. I also think that if you swapped in somebody else for Daenerys, like in this hypothetical, if alternate history of this show.
If it were Euron
or Stannis or Renly or something, that Jon was like, this dude has dragons, we need his help. I think Sansa would have also still,
based on
him not being a northerner, based on this person sort of taking over where Jon had been elected king, she would have not liked that either. So I think there's a little bit of thinking that he's just doing something dumb for love that adds a gendered element to what's happening here. But I think Sansa is sort of impervious to like that kind of jealousy. It's not like a former girlfriend. It's his sister saying, well, he thinks his sister saying, I don't know if we should be letting someone who's not a northerner be in charge here. Mm-hmm. So I'm not as adamant that this is a problem of some sort of lack of feminism in the writing of the show.
Yeah, I mean, in this, obviously we're not going to do it now, but one of the interesting things about the show is that even though it is set in an extremely patriarchal world, even more so than I am, it has been acclaimed as a feminist entertainment, that these women who are trapped in this horrific position that they are strapped in by this medieval society, they still are compelling and interesting and vital and real, and people have liked it for that reason. And it's interesting to see some people like our caller sort of start to lose that faith in it.
I mean, I definitely think that Brienne storyline was problematic.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, it's – yeah, I don't know. I just don't – like that didn't seem like something Brienne would do.
Right.
You know, and that's frustrating because then it's sort of like you're oversimplifying these storylines and going back to like pretty tired tropes in order to like tie something up or create this drama that is not super interesting to
Yeah.
I will say, if that had happened with Arya, if Arya had said yes to Gendry, if Arya had, you know, had some sort of romantic notions, yes. But actually, when I think about it, all Brienne is a hopeless romantic. Like the romance of duty, the romance of honor, all of those things are sort of naive. She's a great fighter, but she's not a... She's never shown an intense sort of sense of agency. She's like, who can I serve?
Right.
Who can I?
She's had this
like,
notion
who
of
who can
knighthood.
I be loyal to?
Right, yeah, but she holds her shit together, you know? And that's the piece that I didn't. And sure, maybe you can make the argument that like she held her shit together until she like had this intimate moment with a person that she did not expect to have. And, you know, that
and for
changes
the first
the
time, she wanted something
but
for herself.
But then, like, if we had had one more scene to sort of like. Where we could have seen that before going to her just losing it over this dude.
I can see that.
I would have appreciated that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Hey, because
it just felt a little, it was just a little too fast.
Before we finished, there was a little moment in the episode that I loved. It was sort of the equivalent of when somebody in a prior episode said, what does the Night King want? And we were like, oh, Trisha, there's your moment. Davos says, the Red God. What the hell? What is he? He actually says, what does he want? He just shows up, does this, and disappears.
We
what
fight
the hell?
His war, and then he's off.
And then he's off. And I was like, thank you, Davos. Thank you, Davos. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you, Davos.
And then
that
leads
up.
To the great Tyrion line, which sort of sets up these last three episodes, which is, well, but now we have to deal with us.
Exactly.
Last two episodes.
Now we have to deal with us.
Okay. Well... At that, should we call it, y'all?
Yeah. I think we just need one big general sigh. Ready?
We should do deep breaths.
Yes.
I liked this episode.
Me too.
What? Oh, we have to do the whole thing again now. What? I thought we just talked about all the things that were wrong with it.
I mean, I had some quibbles, but overall, I mean, I think that I'm going to like this episode more in retrospect, too, because watching the battle, which, by the way, I rewatched with the brightness on the TV all the way up. Still much happening.
Yeah.
Oh, all kinds of things. There are all kinds of coffee cups. All through.
Also,
there's
can we get a jingle, a retroactive jingle?
Oh, Arya's eyebrows.
Arya's eyebrows.
Apparently, I got away with that last
week. I had my headphones off before.
Patriarchy speaking, so ladies be quiet. Peter Sagal is the worst.
There you go. That was
you
for last
having
week.
Lots of opinions about Maisie Williams' eyebrows. We are giving you a patriarchy jingle for that.
Perfect. All right. So if you want to weigh in, especially if there are any other patriarchy jingles we missed, you can use the hashtag NerdatRecaps. Many thanks to Kittens and Puppies 110, who left us a nice review on Apple Podcasts. Trisha, what did Kittens and Puppies 110 say?
The ladies are great. Peter is .. fine. And then parentheses, kidding.
Kidding.
Very funny and enlightening. They got the tote bag.
Yes.
All right.
If you want to get a tote, go to our Instagram page. That is the easiest place to find it. The show is produced by us with help from Justin Bull. And our executive producer is Brendan Banaszak.
Our theme music was composed by Andrew Edwards of Blue Police Box Music.
All right. See y'all next week.
Oh, my God. Two more.
That's so
only two more.
Only two more.
Oh, can we play one more voicemail just really fast, Justin? Mark. Mark had a good prediction.
Hi, this is Mark, and I really appreciate your show. As for predictions coming up, well, I think it's pretty clear that Peter's head's going to explode if Tyrion does not get his act in together and quit being dumb. But it seems to be the way it's going. Anyhow, thanks again, and looking forward to the last two shows and your recaps.
I just loved that his prediction was just that you're going to be mad.
I am. You know, it was a very valid prediction. My head will, in fact, explode if Tyrion does not get his act together damned quick.
I also like that in a lot of the voicemails we get, it sounds like someone is whispering because everyone else in their house is asleep.
Yeah, we actually did get one from someone who was like, hey, I'm in the closet. It happens.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.